Hello, good evening.
Hello.
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 Hello. Well, I just want to welcome everyone to the call. We will probably be putting everybody on mute just so everyone can hear, because as people come on the line, a lot of times everyone will say hello, hello, hello. So I'm going to try to put you all on mute right now so that you can hear the message.
The conference is in lecture mode.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you all for participating and welcome you to the Sisters in Faith devotional teleconference. Sisters in Faith is a brand that's just started out. We thank you all so much for your participation and your support. Each week, there'll be a different contributor to the Sisters in Faith Bible that will lead this teleconference. I'm the lucky one up this week. We've had a couple of dynamic speakers the last couple of weeks, and we've added one more thing to this, that tomorrow one of you will get a phone call, and someone will win a free Bible as well as a free copy of She Speaks. I really want to share with you, I'm so excited, I have so much to share, I hope I get through it all, but I really wanted to share with you all about the women in the Bible. I'm just so passionate about this because sometimes the women who are in the Bible kind of get eclipsed, or it seems like they get eclipsed from the men. And clearly there aren't as many women in the Bible as there are men, so sometimes it kind of makes us think that we're not as important to God, or that somehow he's forgotten us. Now, most of us do know the prominent women who are in the Bible, like the ones who have whole books named after them, like Esther, and we know about her destiny to save a people and her famous stand that she said, if I perish, I perish. And at that point, she surrendered her whole life to obedience to God. And we know her as Queen Esther, but sometimes we don't even think about her as a despised, exiled Jewish orphan who was probably the least likely to be raised up to greatness. What I want to tell you all tonight is that God is no respecter of persons. His promises are true for whomsoever, and that means women. That means all of us. We remember Ruth, who was clearly the picture of loyalty and love, and she honored her mother-in-law, and she followed behind her, if you remember. But we forget sometimes that she was a Moabitess, and the Moabitess were like really hated by the Jews, and yet she followed Naomi into the land with the land of Israel. And she wasn't just following after Naomi, she was also following after Naomi's God. I don't know if you remember, but in Ruth it says that she said, "And your God will be my God." That you can find in Ruth 1:16. I want to tell you that every single woman who's mentioned in the Bible was there for a reason. And God put them there because he had a purpose and there's something he wanted to demonstrate in their lives. Now, tonight I can't go through all of them, but I just want to talk about a couple of these women and put them in some categories for you. And I really, really ask that that I hope this energizes you to go look them all up, because some of these women are one-liners. I mean, some of them, you know, they're mentioned in the Bible like with three words. But when you really researched why they were there, those are three real powerful words about those women. And in Bible times, these were societies where women were seen as less than, and they were seen like not having their own identities. As a matter of fact, there's a part in rabbinical law that says it's better to burn the law than to give it to a woman. And in those cultures, women were considered as not even capable of understanding anything like theology or religion or anything. And but if you pay attention to the stories of these women, you'll see clearly that it was the most downtrodden in society that God most honored. And there is no better example of this than the Samaritan woman. And if you have your Bibles handy, you can find her in John 4. You just couldn't get any lower than her in society, because not only was she a woman, but she was a Samaritan, and Samaritans were really hated by the Jews. But Jesus really went out of his way to come see her. And when I mean out of his way, actually the direct route, he was going from Judea, and actually he was leaving Judea. He had kind of, they had kind of teed him off a little bit, so he was leaving Judea, and he was going to Galilee. And the most direct way from Judea to Galilee is going straight through Samaria. So that would think, well, he didn't really go out of his way to find her. But because Jews held Samaritans to be unclean, and they considered kind of a Jewish cult, because I think they only really paid attention to the first five books of the Torah, then they were considered really outcasts, and Jews wanted nothing to do with the Samaritans. And then on top of that, men weren't ever supposed to talk to women in public. So this woman was a woman. She wasn't supposed to be talked to in public. She was an outcast and a downtrodden and kind of and a Samaritan. And when she got to this, and on top of that, I believe she was probably an outcast amongst her own people, because she was at the well by herself at an unusual time of day. It was, depending on what you've read, she either was at the well at high noon or she was at the well at like 6 p.m., but either time, most women came out to fetch water early in the morning. So she was coming out at a time when other women were not with her. So we could probably guess from that she might have been an outcast of her own people. So here comes Jesus. That's the setting. So here comes Jesus, who is this rabbin, as she called him, a rabbi. So she knew he was a Jew and that he was a teacher, and that they didn't have anything to do with Samaritans. So here comes Jesus up to the well, and he talks to her and asks her to get him some water and to bring him some. So she, now you know why she was so stunned that he would even speak to her. And like I said, Jesus is no respecter of persons. His promises are true for everyone. He spoke to her with respect and humility and with full acceptance, this woman who no one else would accept. At first, she didn't really know who he was, and then he began to reveal himself to her by telling her things that, you know, he couldn't know other than, you know, being a spiritual man. And then she began to slowly understand who he was. And this very important jug of water that she had, she dropped it and she ran to tell everybody what she'd heard. And because of this lowly woman's witness, many Samaritans committed themselves to Christ. She dropped everything she had, and she went to tell people. Jesus didn't just have pity on this woman. You see, it was in his humanity that he had experienced the same kind of rejection and probably really identified with this woman. You see, Jesus coming to earth, God coming to earth, clothed in flesh in the person of Jesus Christ, was so that when we come to him and we say, God, you don't know what I'm going through, he can say, yes, I do, because I've been in flesh. He's been through this. And if you remember Isaiah 53:3, it says, he was despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, as one as whom men had hid their faces, and he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Jesus called Mary and Martha his friends, along with their brother Lazarus, and he hung out with them when he was in town. So Jesus called women his friend. He taught them, and he loved them. And then there was this woman, Mary, that he called mother. You know, why did God select her to be the mother of Jesus? You know, it could be because she was no different from any of us, that she was not royalty, she wasn't rich, she was an everyday person, and the only thing that really set her apart from everybody else was that she had a deep abiding faith and she had a willing heart. Any one of us can have that, and we can be used mightily of God the same way she was. And of course, there's Mary Magdalene, who was Jesus' true servant and friend. And she was the only woman at the cross who was not a member of Jesus' family. And Salome, wife of Zebedee and mother of James and John, was there too, and she witnessed the empty tomb. These were three women who took care of Jesus in his ministry. They followed him around, they cared for him, and they watched him as he was crucified. These were women who loved him and whom he loved. These were women who were important to the life of Jesus Christ. Jesus is no respecter of persons. His promises are true for everyone, and they're true for you. With the little bit of time I have left, I really want to talk about some different kinds of women in the Bible. One is there were very professional and powerful women in the Bible, and I'll name a couple of them. Shiphrah, who was that midwife who was instrumental in assuring that the firstborn sons of Jews weren't killed. She feared God more than she feared Pharaoh. There was Deborah, who was a judge and prophetess, and she's interesting because this was a big deal because judges in biblical times were the single authorities, and they were empowered by God to judge people in worldly matters. And she, on top of everything else, of being a judge and a prophetess, she also had the gift of prophecy. And then God even sent her out to raise up an army of 10,000 against Sisera. And I don't know if you remember, but Sisera was kind of weak-willed and didn't want to go out in the field by himself. And so God had Deborah raise up this army. So she was a general as well. This is an important woman. Most importantly, God used her. And the reason she had all of that and why God put that whole package together was because she had a strong faith, and that made her a spiritual warrior. Then we had the Queen of Sheba. Well, the Queen of Sheba is kind of famous because there was a meeting of two heads of state between her and King Solomon, if you remember. And she came to test him because she had heard that Solomon had all this wisdom, but she came to really want to test him. But she left with a deep respect for him. She had brought a lot of worldly riches. When they came to this meeting, it was just like today. Two heads of state are meeting. They bring all this fanfare, bring jewels and stuff. Well, not so much jewels anymore, but they brought jewels and all kinds of riches. But she left that meeting with God's wisdom and left behind the jewels because the wisdom was worth far more than those jewels. Then, of course, we had Candace, who was an Ethiopian ruler, and she's one of those one-liners that we don't pay so much attention to. Candace is kind of an overall term for the women who were rulers in Ethiopia, but she had such benevolence, and in those days, you know, going to travel was kind of a tedious thing. It would take long periods of time, and her treasurer wanted to travel to Jerusalem to worship, and it was going to take him months to come, so she kind of had to let him have a long vacation. And she went, and it's believed that he was the first Gentile convert. Yes, he was an Ethiopian, and it was his salvation and her allowing him to bring that back to Ethiopia that really helped fulfill the prophecy that I believe is in Psalms 68:31, that Ethiopia would quickly stretch out her hands to God. And even now, Ethiopia is one of the largest Christian populations of any African nation. There was Lydia, a woman who dealt in purple. She's another one-liner. She started off meeting on Sundays for church and then stepped it up and had Paul and his followers stay at her home. She diligently studied, and even with her busy schedule, she witnessed to her whole family, and they all began serving the Lord together. She really demonstrates that faith isn't passive, it's active, and she used all her resources and her time to glorify God. Nothing else was more important to her than that, yet she still was a successful businesswoman, busy schedule and all. Bathsheba was the wife of King David and the mother of King Solomon, and she was kind of a traitor in politics, like she was a strong political figure, and she helped secure David's throne for Solomon. Solomon wasn't supposed to be the son who was going to be king. It was one of his other sons by another mother, but she made sure that Solomon became king. And yeah, it's true that David and Bathsheba committed adultery and had a child from that union who died, but they repented and God forgave them and restored their promise and their purposes through Solomon. and that restoration affected generations to come. Are you understanding, as I'm going through these women one by one, how important they were to the plans of God, not just for their lifetime, but for eternity? There were women who were prophetesses and church leaders. There was a woman named Anna, and I don't think she's a one-liner, but she wasn't in there much. And she was a prophetess who lived in the temple. Her husband had died, and she had been barren for a lot of years. And I seem to remember that she was like in her 80s or 90s. And she had asked God. She had lived in the temple, and she devoted herself only to God. And she fasted and prayed. Some of you are just coming off your beginning of the year fasted, and this was a woman who believed in fasting and praying. And she prayed without ceasing over anyone who came in the temple. And she prayed that God would let her live long enough to see the Savior come into the world, and he did let her do that. When Mary and Joseph brought their baby into the temple, she knew right away who he was. And there are just some things that only happen when we fast and pray, and God delights in giving us the desires of our heart. This was a woman who just said, this is what I want to see. God, give me this. And she prayed over and over again, and God let her see the Savior come into the world. There were also villains. We can't discount the villains, because even in the villainous' lives, God shows us something. Delilah, we know, was a gold digger, pure and simple. She delivered Samson into the hands of the Philistines for them to kill him for 1,100 pieces of silver. And she even had the nerve to get mad when Samson wouldn't cooperate with his own demise. That's kind of all we know about Delilah. No lineage in front of her, no lineage behind her, no husband, just kind of used to the devil and a life wasted. She's not to be glorified by folks in movies or in folklore like we do. Same thing with Jezebel. You know, we like to tell these stories like there's some love stories and these women who are Jezebels. But Jezebel was an idol worshiper, and she was determined to convert everybody else around her. And she married Ahab, who was the king of Israel. So he married an idol worshiper. Now, you knew God wasn't going to let that go, but so far. But Ahab kind of wasn't a strong believer, so he turned his beliefs towards Baal, which is what she did, and then caused other people to follow them. And Ahab didn't go up against her, but there was a prophet, Elijah, who did. And they kind of had a God showdown. And you don't have to wonder, you know, her Baal against his God, and you don't have to wonder who lost. She was kind of embarrassed, and eventually when her husband died, she sat on the throne very quickly, not considered a long ruler, but very quickly on the throne of Israel, but God didn't let that happen for long. She was executed, and he put Jehu, a man after his own heart, on the throne. We're always accountable to God, even when we don't want to be. And in the end, God wins. We know that. But the evilest, I think, of all the women, if you ever read this story, is Athaliah, who was the daughter of Jezebel. Now, that'll show you how stuff follows in generations and how stuff will continue to follow you in a generation unless you break it off. But Jezebel was, Athaliah was just like pure evil. She murdered her whole family so she could have absolute power. And then she led other people away from God. I mean, it's bad enough when you do what you do, but when you lead people away from God, your end is not going to be a good one. She was married to King Jehoram, who killed all his brothers to assure that he would have a place on the throne. And then he died from a terrible disease, and his son then took the throne, and he got killed in battle. And then Athaliah said, I'm done messing with these men. I'm taking over. So she killed all the other relatives who would even have a shot at the throne, including her own children and grandchildren, so that she could take the throne. And she ruled for 6 years very harshly and on the throne of Israel. But she was unaware that her daughter had been hidden and had hidden the grandson from her. And so there finally came a day when the daughter joined with the priests and claimed the throne for a grandson. She tried to run, but she couldn't hide. They captured her. They killed her. So that's a very simple moral of that story, which is that you will reap what you sow. And when you stand against God, there is no place you can run. I'm most impressed with some of the women who in the Bible were represented with no name, like Pharaoh's daughter. She was an Egyptian princess who at a time of deep racial prejudice and injustice had the courage to save and adopt Moses. There is the virtuous woman. Proverbs represents her as what a godly woman should be, that she would do anything for her family and is a powerful force in her own right. There's the Shulamite woman in the Song of Solomon, who's the picture of the love God intended between a man and a woman. And if you're single, ladies, or even if you're married, follow that blueprint for God's courtly relationship, and that level is going to work for you. But the Shulamite woman is also symbolic of God's love for his people, which is real rich and deep. And even though we're not perfect, we are made perfect through him. He doesn't see our flaws, just like Solomon saw no flaws in that woman that he loved. And if you've read that Song of Solomon, he would talk about some things on her that sounded kind of like they were funny looking, but he just loved all of her. Then there was the Canaanite woman who was a mother who was willing to do whatever she could do for her daughter to be healed, and she knew that Jesus could do that. She was a Gentile, but she cried out to this Jew to save her daughter, and he didn't answer her at first, so she kept asking. She kept asking, I want you to heal my daughter. She just wouldn't give up. Even when it appeared he had answered her, but he didn't grant her petition, she kept at him, and she followed him around. When he would move, she would move, until finally he said something that sounded like it insulted her. And he said that it wasn't right to take food from the children and give it to the dogs. And she didn't have any pride left, and she said she didn't care about being compared to a dog. She said that even dogs need to have leftover scraps. And with that, her daughter was healed, because God looked straight into that woman's heart and saw that she was truly desperate for him. How desperate are you for him? You know, are you as desperate? Would you do anything? Would you follow him around until he granted your petition? Because God saw that that petition wasn't a selfish one. It was one born out of how much love she had for her daughter. Then, of course, there is the woman with the issuance of blood. This woman had been sick and an outcast for 12 years, what they kind of describe as like she'd been on a period for 12 years, and that because of that, she was seen as unclean, and nobody could touch her, and she couldn't touch anybody else. But Jesus valued her like no one else, including herself. And at the moment she reached out to touch Jesus, nothing was more important to him than that woman, right then and there, who reached out to touch the hem of his garment. So ladies, whenever we're feeling broken, or we feel like outcast, like no one else truly loves or cares, we need only to draw close to Jesus and reach out to touch the hem of his garment. There are women who saved their husbands. Zipporah, the Lord almost killed Moses because he was disobedient and failed to circumcise his son. So Zipporah jumped up in there and she circumcised the son and saved Moses. Michal, wife of David, who stood up against, she was the wife of David, but she was the daughter of King Saul, and she stood up against her father and helped her husband escape from Saul when Saul saw David as a threat to his throne. She always put her husband first. Abigail's husband, Nabal, was mean as they come, and he did dumb stuff when he was mean, and one time he totally disrespected David after David had been kind to him. And she was smart enough to recognize that his acts had put everybody else's life in jeopardy, including hers and his own. So she personally went out and smoothed things over with David and saved everybody. Of course, 10 days later, Nabal was dead, and Abigail wound up marrying David, but she didn't know that at the time. She took up for Nabal. Now, of course, last but not least, there are all the mothers in the Bible, women who some of them are known only for the accomplishments of their seed. But that was their purpose in life. Their purpose was to raise up strong men and women of God and to affect generations to come. That's a worthy call, and that's a worthy purpose in life. Though, you know, even Eve, we see Eve as the first woman and that she messed up big time. But don't forget that her name means the source of life, and that despite all the sins she brought in the world, she also brought life to it. And God purposed her as the mother of all of us through her son Seth. Timothy's mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois, Sarah, Hagar, who was obedient to God, wound up in the desert with her poor son Ishmael, and God kept his promise and made Ishmael the father of 12 tribes. But I want to focus lastly on this little known mother, Rizpah. Rizpah had two sons with King Solomon, and after Saul died and David rose to power and sacrificed Rizpah's two sons in order to make peace with the Gibeonites, because King Solomon had killed a bunch of the Gibeonites, and so David felt like he needed to make peace with them, and he sacrificed Rizpah's two sons. So her sons were given over to these Gibeonites, and they hung her sons, and their bodies were left for birds to eat. This mom laid out in sackcloth and watched over boys and kept their bodies from harm so that those birds wouldn't eat them. And day and night for weeks she protected them, and she never left their side so their memory wouldn't be defiled or insulted. David finally took pity on her and took her sons' bodies down and gave them to her. She couldn't do any more to honor her sons in life, but she fought to be diligent to stand up for them in death. A mother never stops being a mother, even after their children predecease them. Jesus is no respecter of persons. His promises are true to everyone. What I want to say to all of my sisters out there is that God has not forgotten you, nor has he forsaken you. You were created for greatness, just like each one of these women. And like some of them, you may not know on this side of heaven how you fit into his story. But trust me, you fit like a glove, and without that little piece that you are in the puzzle, God's masterpiece just wouldn't be the same. Let this be the year that you say, Lord, I trust you, and I believe that you know the plan you have for me, plans to prosper me and not to harm me, plans to give me hope and a future. And all my sisters out there, I just want to pray that over you, that this would be the year that you would say, Lord, I trust you in everything you do. That's been spoken as a prophetic word over my church, and I believe it's a prophetic word this year over all of God's church. Lord, I trust you. And if
the conference is no longer in lecture mode.
If all of you, if I can hear you, just say to me now, Lord, I trust you. Let me hear you, sister. Let me hear you say, Lord, I trust you. Lord, I trust you.
Lord, I trust you.
In your hard times and in your good times, when you're happy, when you're sad, when your family's in turmoil, whatever it is you're going through, start your day. Lord, I trust you. I thank you all for joining us. Please join us next week, same time, same place, and someone look for that Bible. I bless all of you. I pray for you. Please pray for me. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Michelle.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I can just hear everybody say.